If you negotiate with your knee before standing up, you're losing that argument. Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000 as in zero pain.
WGN. John Williams here and back into the newsroom. I'm watching and I see that Nancy Pelosi is announcing the impeachment managers. Steve, I don't see the names.
John, we have them here for you as we have been monitoring this news conference that's underway right now. Nancy Pelosi has announced these people will be the managers of the impeachment trial, including Adam Schiff of California, Jerry Nadler of New York, Jason Crow of Colorado, Zoe Lofgren of California, Val Demings of Florida, Hakeem Jeffries of New York, and Sylvia Garcia of Texas. The House Speaker says that the official transmission of the impeachment articles will happen a little bit later today after a vote in the House.
We'll keep you posted. 9:14. That's in the WGN Radio Newsroom. That's our Steve Grzanich. It's 9:14 now. We'll talk a little bit about this new news broadcast. I may slip and call it a network, but it's not. It'll be on WGN America, which is distributed to, what was the number I saw? 75 million homes across America. It'll be a 3-hour nightly national newscast. It'll be originating from Channel 9's studios. They're building a gleaming new set. I saw the prototype of it yesterday, and it really looks fantastic. One of the things I like about this is that over 100 journalists are going to be hired, and I presume many of them will be from the Chicago area. As the media has been cutting back in this town, there are some amazingly talented people at the ready in the Chicago area. Some of them are print, some of them are radio, some of them are TV, some of them are electronic platform people, but there's quite a talent pool here and then across the country. They've got all of these stations across America, and the idea is that no hour repeats itself. It will be 3 original hours of nightly news, and the sweet spot is going to be that it's fact-driven and it's non-biased. This isn't talk shows. You don't have Rachel Maddow, you don't have Sean Hannity. You have people just saying the news. I mean, Bob said, are we going to resurrect Walter Cronkite? Wouldn't it be nice if we did? We'll get to all of that in just a little bit. By the way, last night, our Jeopardy! Tournament of Champions ended with James Holzhauer finishing in second place. I thought it was so interesting because last night, Holzhauer is down 2-1. If Ken Jennings wins, he wins the whole thing. If Holzhauer wins, he ties it up. We go on. At the final question of Final Jeopardy, if Holzhauer got it right, he bet everything. He would have won last night's match. He would have tied the score, but he did not. And then he said something really interesting about his future after that. 312-981-7200. Let's do the Holzhauer thing first because I said I would, Producer Elif. So as they were introducing the players at one point last night, they turned to this James Holzhauer guy who's just a genius. His brain is bizarre. He's a sports betting expert. That's how he makes a living. But he's just as good at facts that you know and I don't know as he is at sports betting. So Trebek comes up to him and he does a little Q&A, and this is what that sounded like.
James, your daughter is now 5.
That's correct, yeah.
Has she become a handful?
Become?
Oh. Now, you're a professional gambler. You've earned enough money to continue in that career for as long as you want. Is that what you're going to continue doing, or are you going to go elsewhere?
We'll see what the world of media has to offer me, I think.
Yeah. His brother Ian had alluded to that. So I think he's going to be, you watch, he is going to be on TV. It'll be a nightly thing, maybe once a week thing, and it'll be a sports betting thing. And they're going to say, James, who do you like in the Super Bowl? James, what do you think about Game 3 of the World Series? Or just the Northwestern game, Ohio State, here's the spread. Will they cover? They'll be asking him questions like that. And that's what this guy does for a living. And people now know who he is. Think about the money he could make, right or wrong, just offering information. That's my guess where he goes with that. We were talking about this WGN America nightly newscast, and I asked you a couple questions about it. Terry jumped on the phone this morning. Hi, Terry. You're on the air.
Hi. Good to see you again. I think that this WGN new platform is going to be great. I really do. Unfortunately, when you throw out the facts, one side or the other is always going to claim foul. especially with the current administration in Washington, the facts are not going to be particularly flattering to the conservative side. And with the current situation in Illinois, the facts aren't going to be particularly flattering to the Democratic side either.
I think it's going to be a really hard newscast to write, you know. If you say the sky is blue, but yesterday it was pink, they're going to say, well, but you didn't say anything about the pink. What about the pink sky yesterday? And so I think it'll be very difficult to do. But I like the challenge. You know, I'd really like to hear what that sounds like and looks like. You know, never mind that it's the same company and that I know some of the people that will probably be employed there. I like the idea that somebody's investing millions of dollars in the news business and the nightly newscast will originate from Chicago. I hope this doesn't sound naive, but I'm really optimistic. I'm hopeful that that goes well. You know what I mean?
I am too. I don't dispute the fact that WGN will put out the facts as they are. I really don't. I believe they will because I've been a long-time WGN fan for 50 years.
Yeah.
So I believe they'll put out the facts the way they are. It's just the way they're going to be perceived by the people who they're talking about. And that's a shame the way things are going today. Really
thanks for the phone call. I really appreciate you listening.
Thanks, John.
Have a good day, Terry. Here's an example of how difficult it is. So at the Clemson football game, the national championship with LSU, So Donald Trump and the First Lady came out, and I was not listening, but I did see them march out, and they march with the color guard. They do the national anthem. CNN, as best I could tell, and I always thought MSNBC's over here, Fox is over there, but I was always looking to CNN to do it right down the middle. And with their talk show host, clearly they're not. But even then, you'd hope that their news coverage would be fair and balanced as it can be. Anyway, this is the sound of the president and first lady as they walk out onto the field. You remember at the World Series when Donald Trump came out, or when they showed Donald Trump on the big screen? And the crowd kind of booed. It was mixed, yeah, but it wasn't Washington. All positive.
Yeah, he sort of smiled.
Yeah, it was a really weird moment. So I think what's happened now is when the president makes a public appearance, the crowd chooses to vote, if you will, with their voice. So now he's a sounding board. Do you support him or do you not support him? Because he's been abused when he was at other places. I don't remember CNN telling this part of the story. For instance, the fact that Vince Vaughn shook his hand and then the social media blew up on Vince Vaughn. Okay, that happened, but this went for over 2 minutes. I'll have cut to the next. I'm not going to give you 2 minutes of that, but go ahead and cut that out and go to the next soundbite. Then into that serenade of the president, the crowd started chanting. Play that when you can, Elif. Yeah, it's hard to tell what that is, but they chanted 4 more years.
See, and I'm listening at home. I thought they were chanting USA.
They did that also.
Oh, okay.
It became just a rally for the president and the country and how synonymous those are with a lot of people. And I think that's a story. Now you're this new national news network. Do you tell that story? And how do you tell that story is going to be the challenge. Do you buttress that with, but they said bad things about him before, but then wait a minute, now you're showing a bias. Like, can't you just tell this and make it straight up? I hope they can do this. I'm just suggesting to you that it will be a challenge. And maybe even we need to sort of, everybody wipe our mental slates clean, give them a chance to succeed and fail a little bit to the right or to the left, let them get it right, but let them try. Let's let them try. It's going to, it's not on TV yet. It will be sometime this summer. They expect they'll be up and running in the summer. Dave's worried about parking over at Channel 9.
No, I'm not personally. I haven't been going over there much.
120 new people will be circling the McDonald's over there on Bradley Place going, wait a minute.
where are they going to put all these cars?
Have you guys thought about that? Mark, you're on WGN Radio. What do you want to say? You're on the air.
Well, first of all, John, I don't know that any news can be unbiased, because even if there were no selection effects, there would still be the way those are inflected in the vocal reporting. So I think bias is almost impossible to get rid of. I would say, though, that I like the idea of a three-hour newscast, except it would be kind of long to sit through at times, but at least one source of bias would be largely eliminated, and that would be the encapsulation of news, because that has to make a selection of facts. But where do I get my news besides WGN? NPR. I've been surprised at how even-handed they've been at times. So, for instance, when Jerry Falwell died, I expected NPR to come down on him hard for his homosexuality stance. They hardly mentioned that, but they did spend a lot of time talking about what a good friend he was, what a caring pastor he was, really? What a renowned college president he was, and they used interview sound bites to prove their point. So maybe NPR has a liberal bias at times, but in that instance, I thought they were very even-handed.
Jerry Falwell, the founder of the Moral Majority. And that's interesting, too, though, because think about that. How do you not mention some of those things? If this is his obituary, that should be in there. So the day he dies,
they were only mentioned. They weren't dwelled on.
Yeah, well, that's a good point, isn't it? I appreciate the phone call, Mark. Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
928, so that debuts in the summer. 100-plus journalists hired, and what is it, 75 million households across the country will have access to it. I also like the idea, sort of like when there's a national broadcast at Soldier Field or Wrigley Field or whatever, and the blimp or something flies over. They do those panning shots of our beautiful city at night or during the day. Well, you're going to get that every night. I mean, you know, live from Chicago.
Yeah.
And then whatever they call it, and then whatever their logo will be. Ba-da-bam. And then they're going to get that coach from LSU to announce the name of the anchor.
Coach O?
So that's coming, and I'm optimistic. I'm looking forward to that. Did you see the story that Elizabeth Warren, just speaking of politics, says that if she becomes president, certainly this is what she wants to do. She wants to cancel all college debt. Do your kids have college debt?
Thankfully, mine did not.
Mine did not either. And then you and I are outliers on that. Mm-hmm. Mary, are you paying off any student loans in the Vanderbilt household?
I am not. My kids, yes.
Wait, so your kids are carrying some debt?
They're both married.
Yeah.
Yes. And yeah. My younger son, no, he got enough scholarships and worked it out, and he doesn't.
So. How many kids, though, go into married life or young adulthood, and they don't have an apartment or a house? I guess I'm not sure where they're living, but just think about all of the things they would spend their money on, including saving it, but they're paying down their student loans.
I would say it's probably like 75%.
Yeah, it's very high.
And
the amount that some of them are paying will just break your heart. So
that's why they're not getting married right away.
I think that's part of it.
Or moving out of the house.
And that too. On Jeopardy last night, one of the questions was, what percentage of the kids in Italian households, 18 to 34, still live at home? And what was it, Elif? It was like 30%+. I think it was even higher. You think it was 35?
Yeah.
So yeah, it was like over a third of the 18 to 34-year-olds in Italy are still living at home. We'll play more of those Jeopardy questions. Anyway, we'll talk about college debt and the possibility that it will go away in the 11 o'clock hour. If I'd never heard that guy before and you said, what does this guy do? What do you think this guy does for a living? I'd just like, if I didn't know anything about him, I would go,
this team is going to be mentioned as one of the greatest teams in college football history.
I would go, that's an LSU football coach. That's a coach from Louisiana. We just go out there and we'll get it done.
He's a college football
coach. He's a college football
happens
coach.
Happens to be from Louisiana.
Happens to be from Louisiana.
And happens to coach LSU.
We'll score more points than them. We'll run the ball up and down the field. We'll score more points. We'll win the ball game.
15-0.
We're going to do this show. We're going to start it now. We're going to go from 9 o'clock to about noon. 9 o'clock to noon, that's about 3 hours. At the end of the 3 hours, we're going to see what we got, and whoever has the best show wins.
That's not bad.
We're going to do 3 hours. 3 hours of radio this way.
Actually pretty good.
Going to interview some people. Let's go in the newsroom. What have you got? What have you got? If you got something for me, let's hear it. If you don't got something, I'll do something else. Figure out what works, we're going to win this thing. Had the LSU football coach in my head yesterday after the national championship game. Came home, said, hi, I'm home. What have you got for supper? You got some vittles?
Did she think you were Elvis?
No, she thought I was the LSU coach. Not funny. That just hurts a little bit.
You know, that's like the Wisconsin fight song. It's got nothing to do with LSU.
If you would notice that. But it was a college fight song. I Googled it and it came up.
Okay.
All right, Mr. Smarty Pants, listen to this from Jeopardy last night. This is the final, this is not final Jeopardy, but obviously it's the greatest of all time tournament of champions. We've been following it more closely here since a local guy has been doing so well but did not win. Here was one of the questions from last night's show.
Way back in the 19th century, the football team of this school that's now in the Big Ten was nicknamed the Purple.
Dave Bennett, go.
I have no idea.
LF, play the answer, please.
James. Or is Northwestern?
Correct.
He knew that.
I knew it. So obvious.
Was that last night?
Yeah.
Yes, it was great.
During our game, that seems like a conflict.
I had just turned it on, and that was the first question that came up, and I go, oh, maybe the questions are easier tonight.
No. I think some of them, it was bizarre. Some of them were, I knew the answers to some of them. It was that easy. And then some of them were like, I don't even know what you guys are talking about. Okay, here's another one. This is the category of Modern Family. These are some of those statistics we talked about earlier.
Let's go to Modern Family for 600.
In world news, this policy, whose end was announced in 2015, is estimated to have prevented 400 million births.
World news, this policy prevented 400 million births. Anyone? Bueller?
I think I know.
Go ahead.
The one-child policy?
The one-child policy?
James. What is the one-child policy?
In China, yes.
Is that Steve Grzanich?
Was it really called that?
Yeah. They weren't kidding around.
Oh, gee.
Okay, here's another one of the questions from the Modern Family category.
Modern Family at 100.
Among 18 to 34-year-olds, two-thirds of Italians live here, as opposed to one-third of Germans and Brits.
It's one-thirds of the Germans and Brits, but two-thirds of the Italians, 18 to 34. Two-thirds of Italians, 18 to 34, live where?
Brad.
What is with their parents?
Yes.
Wow. How about that? So I don't
Wouldn't it be funny if somebody said, Italy?
You dope. Two-thirds. So if you're worried about your 18 to 34-year-old still living off of your rent, I don't know if it's an economic thing there. I think it is. But it's also, I think, a cultural thing.
Right. I was going to say it could be so someone that we know recently told us that she still lives with her parents. And part of it is because they want to make sure that she's got someone before she leaves the house.
Don't know what you mean.
A significant other.
A significant
marriage.
Yes. Oh, they want her to stay with them until they get married?
Yeah, like in Turkey, that's kind of common too.
Well, that's what I mean. So it's cultural, I think.
It's a little old fashioned.
Or they stay to take care of their elderly parents too.
I think it works that way too in the old world, yeah. Here's another question and answer. Same category, Modern Family last night on Jeopardy.
Modern Family for 1,000.
In U.S. marriages with husband and wife working, this is now the case for 29% of wives, up from 18% in the 1980s.
29% were both parents work versus, 18% in the 1980s. Does that jump out at you? You have a guess on that one?
They make more than their husbands?
Ella, go ahead and play the answer to that one, please.
Ken, what is they out earn their husbands?
That's it.
Yes.
Mary got it right. Mary got it right.
I had no idea.
Yes, said a lot of ladies. And hey, I think a lot of guys would like that as well. We were talking a little while ago about this. I don't know if you heard, but WGN America is going to WGN America, the national network of TV stations across the country, will sometime this summer begin a national nightly 3-hour newscast originating from Chicago. Don't know who the lead anchor or anchors will be on that. Some of you have said Shep Smith, who left Fox News. He was on a network that leaned to the right, but I think a lot of people saw him as down the middle. If you had to pick a national name, I think you could do a lot worse than him. I'm nominating Dave Ennett for the sports desk over there, but Dave said he didn't know how much sports they're going to do. Speaking of national news, real quick, so the House names the impeachment managers, and to be honest with you, Steve Grzanich, I'm not sure what those seven people do.
Well, and I think the best way to look at this is think of them as prosecutors. So all of the seven that were announced today will present the case that the House came up with for impeachment to the senators. They'll give presentations. If there are witnesses, they'll help question witnesses. But their main job is to transmit all of the facts that were gathered by the House to the Senate in some clear and concise way. And normally the people that are picked for this, we haven't had a lot of experience with this, by the way, because there's only been been a couple of groups of impeachment managers in history, are former prosecutors and the like. So, for instance, leading the House managers are Adam Schiff from California and Jerry Nadler of New York, people like Hakeem Jeffries of New York and Zoe Lofgren of California. All of these folks are attorneys or former U.S. attorneys. Have some prosecution background. So that'll be their big job, and they have a big place in history now as the impeachment managers, as these articles of impeachment are transmitted today.
There you go. Thank you, Steve. You're 949.
Welcome.
In our studio right now is the guy whose book I was talking about yesterday, Dan Egan. He was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. He's a Milwaukee guy. And his New York Times bestseller, The Death and Life of the Great Lakes, is just a fascinating read. It is not, I think I said yesterday, that it is the one book Chicago book this year. In fact, The Sixth Extinction is, which is, again, also about the planet we live on and how we take care of it. And that's by Elizabeth Colbert. Colbert will be in town, but today in town is Dan Egan, and he's speaking at the Harold Washington Library at 6 o'clock tonight. Welcome to the studio, and welcome back to Chicago. How are you?
Thanks for having me. I'm doing really well.
What's the bottom line? The Death and Life of the Great Lakes. By the way, I read this book. I quoted extensively from it yesterday. It's a little heartbreaking, but I haven't lost hope for the water either.
Yeah, I mean, the lakes have suffered a lot over the last 200 years, but they're still spectacular. I mean, you can see that every day. You can see that out this window right here.
What's the worst threat to the Great Lakes?
Well, if I was living in Chicago right now, I would feel threatened by the Great Lakes as much as worrying about the threats to the Great Lakes. It's water levels is a big issue.
Yeah, well, didn't we notice that this weekend?
Yeah, we had the same thing going on up in Milwaukee.
What was that all about? Was it the rain or was it the wind pushing the water?
It was waves and it's water levels. You know, we're within a few centimeters of all-time record high, which was in 1986 when you had Lakeshore Drive underwater.
That's a function of what?
Well, the water levels are cyclical, but what's going on right now, and historically they kind of peaked, ebbed and flowed. First of all, they have little ebbs and flows throughout the year. They'll be at their high in the summer and then drop about a foot in the winter and then come back. Underlying that undulation are bigger swings based on about 30 years. And so our record low was in 1964, and our record high was in 1986. Then we hit a new record low in 2013. Then we hit a new record high, or flirting with a new record high right now here in 2020. So it was compressed to 7 years. And so what's going on? It's wacky weather. It's climate. It's a whole new era for the lakes. And there's nothing that says these lakes, this lake in particular that I'm looking at right now, has to stay shackled to its long-term high and long-term low. It can go higher, and that could be trouble.
Trouble because what, it's going to splash over the road, or it's going to damage houses?
Yeah, I mean, just imagine this. You know, if the lake, you know, comes back to Lakeshore Drive in January or February because it's not frozen, and then it gets cold, and then you have all that, it's not water, it's ice on the road. I mean, that's just a one-episode situation. But when you think about where you could be trending, it's concerning.
I also think about the health, though, of the life in the lake.
Yeah.
I don't think about all of the fish out there. There's a lot of fish out there. But you said the mussel population there is stunning, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know the exact bathymetry of the lake off of Chicago, and I don't know it off of Milwaukee, but I know enough to know that if I were to walk about 400 yards off, get away from the sand, away from the surf, to the bottom of the lake, if you drain the lake, you could walk from Milwaukee to Muskegon on a bed of invasive quagga mussels, which are a lot like zebra mussels. They're
what are they like doing that's harmful? You said it keeps the water clean.
Keeps it clear. That's a difference. Clear isn't necessarily clean. A healthy Lake Michigan is going to be a brothy kind of green. And what's happened over the last 15 years or so is they've just stripped all the plankton out of the water and they've made it Caribbean clear. And it's gorgeous, but it's also, you know, strangling.
In other words, we need that organic matter in the water.
Absolutely. These the fish got to eat.
All right, then let's get something to eat, the mussels.
Well, there is something. There's a little invasive fish called the round goby. And it's, you know, you remember the alewives back in the 1960s, and that was kind of a cockroach of a fish. This is the new cockroach, or at least people thought it was. But it eats mussels, and anything that eats a round goby is doing all right. And as nature would have it, what's doing well are native lake trout, native walleye, native whitefish. Whitefish are eating gobies, and they're not even piscivores. They're not fish-eating fish, typically. But if it's death or a goby, they'll take a goby.
So this is good news, right? Are you encouraged?
But yeah, I mean, it's not all gloom and doom. I mean, we're never going to get back the prairie that, you know, is now Greater Chicago, and we're never going to get back all the species that we once had in the lake, but that doesn't mean we can't reach a new stability, because the lakes have been really swung out of whack since the 1950s, since the opening of the St. Lawrence Seaway.
Are you worried about the Asian carp?
I personally don't fret the carp, but professionally.
Why not? Isn't it inevitable?
Well,
though,
I guess you're I guess I don't.
Mission,
when you say, "Are
eat
you
eat everything?"
Yeah, I guess when you say, "Am I worried?" I'm worried about the carp in the context of the Great Lakes. I don't dream about carp. I've spent a lot of my life covering Asian carp, so I guess it was kind of a flip answer. I apologize for that. But I've done my time with the carp, and they do pose a real threat to the lakes. And there is more that can be done and needs to be done, and hopefully will be done, because they're mustering. And, you know, I can look down at the Chicago River right here, and, you know, that's the way they go.
These are the ones that jump out of the water when a boat goes down the Illinois River,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you've seen those.
They're so abundant, people shoot them with bows and arrows, for crying out loud, as they sail through the sky.
It's really hard to explain, and words don't really do it justice. That's why you got to go to YouTube or
do Asian carp, and oh my God, you can't believe it. So if those things come up the river, get past the electrical barrier, which you don't seem to have a lot of confidence in, they get into Lake Michigan, don't they start to screw with everything out there?
Potentially, yeah. You know, there's a debate among biologists as to whether or not these mussels that we were just talking about beat the carp to the punch, because the carp eat the same thing the mussels do, plankton. They're filter feeders. And the lakes now, Lake Michigan at certain times of year, only has a plankton population of about 10% of what it had pre-mussel invasion. So there's not a lot of food out there, but these carp are resourceful, and there's a reason why they've made it as far as they have coming up the Mississippi River Basin. So yeah, they could throw things out of whack all over again.
Less than a minute. Tell me what you think about the use of the lake water by that plant in Milwaukee.
Foxconn. Yeah, you know, there's been a lot of controversy over that. And there's a thing called a Great Lakes Compact, which restricts diversions out of the Great Lakes. And this facility is being supplied water through the provisions of that compact. Still, people get a little bit queasy about taking Lake Michigan water for such a big industrial process. Then again, you know, jobs and clean water aren't mutually exclusive. I don't think it's really a question of the volume of water they're going to be taking, especially given the near high record high lows we've got right now. It's the quality that they send back, and that's going to be up to the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and they're going to have to do a job there.
You're in town tonight at the Harold Washington Library talking along these lines?
Yes. Yeah.
If you do not have The Death and Life of the Great Lakes by Dan Egan, get this book. It's fascinating. It's really accessible. If you're not a scientist, you'll enjoy this book. And it's one of the great resources of the world, where you put the freshwater in context to seawater, and available freshwater is fascinating.
Yeah.
So check out the book. Check out him. 6 o'clock tonight, Harold Washington Library downtown. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you. Thanks for having me.
That's Depeche Mode. Depeche Mode and others nominated into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The 8 inductees joining the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in the class of 2020 announced this morning. So you get Depeche Mode, who you're hearing there, the Doobie Brothers, Whitney Houston, Nine Inch Nails, the Notorious B.I.G., and T-Rex. There were two others in non-performance categories that were nominated into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They asked fans, who do you want to put into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? And the number one vote getter was the Dave Matthews Band. The Dave Matthews Band does not get in. 1 million people said, Dave Matthews, please. And they said no. 880,000 said, how about Pat Benatar? They said no. Fans also wanted Judas Priest, Kraftwerk, MC5, Motorhead. They did not get in, but you do get Whitney Houston, who of course should be in there. The Doobie Brothers, that makes sense. I'm not so familiar with Depeche Mode, Nine Inch Nails, Notorious B.I.G., or T-Rex, but played a lot of Whitney Houston and Doobie Brothers records in my radio DJ days. So they are in the Hall of Fame. Kind of funny, though, that they say Todd Rundgren did not get in. Chaka Khan, Rufus featuring Chaka Khan, did not get in. Soundgarden and Thin Lizzy. Dave Matthews, Pat Benatar, not picked for the 2020 induction, despite topping the fan vote. Well, I don't think this eliminates them completely. They'll get in someday. How do you not put Dave Matthews in there? I don't know if Todd Rundgren's ever going to get in there. I guess that's the... Yeah, and I thought Pat Benatar made sense. See, Bertrand was talking to us about that when I think we heard who some of the possibilities were, and Steve didn't see that one at all. I wasn't a big Pat Benatar fan, but I thought, no, she's got it. She's got it. Nope, she does not got it. It's 10:12 on WGN Radio. You just heard in the news a moment ago that Senator Elizabeth Warren and Senator Bernie Sanders got into a little exchange last night. A lot is being made about the fact that after the debate, the two of them approached each other. She approached him. She said something to him. He then pointed his famous finger at her and said something back to her. They didn't shake hands or come to any kind of an agreement. I have no problem with that. I mean, these are people who will have their finger on the button. These are people that will run our armed forces and your taxes. And so if they don't agree on everything, if they have strong positions, if they get angry or animated about this stuff, heck yeah, they should. And they don't have to agree or be pals all the time. I'm sure they'll be civil with each other. Bernie Sanders said he'll support whoever wins. But right now, they didn't agree on something. But the thing they didn't agree on sure strikes me as trivial. This was the point of contention last night at the debate.
CNN reported yesterday that, and Senator Warren confirmed in a statement, that in 2018, you told her that you did not believe that a woman could win the election. Why did you say that?
Well, as a matter of fact, I didn't say it. And I don't want to waste a whole lot of time on this, because this is what Donald Trump and maybe some of the media want. Anybody knows me, knows that it's incomprehensible that I would think that a woman could not be president of the United States. Hillary Clinton won the popular vote by 3 million votes. How could anybody in a million years not believe that a woman could become president of the United States?
You're saying that you never told Senator Warren that a woman could not win the election.
That is correct.
Senator Warren, what did you think when Senator Sanders told you a woman could not win the election?
I disagreed. Bernie is my friend, and I am not here to try to fight with Bernie. But look, this question about whether or not a woman can be president has been raised, and it's time for us to attack it.
Bernie said that it was absurd that he would say that, since Hillary got more votes than Donald did in the last election anyway, so of course a woman could win the election, yada, yada, yada. I think that it's plausible that given a slate, he would say a woman can't win at this time or against that person. I don't know what he said, but it's just pretty funny that the two of them disagreed on what they heard, and that the person asking the question clearly was taking her version as the truth. That was that sort of gasp, groan, and laugh that you heard from the crowd. But again, I don't know that that question or that answer is that important. And yet today, that's what everybody's focusing on, rather than taxes or education or the war or whatever else we got to worry about these days. I thought it was also interesting that Warren says she wants to forgive all of the college debt that students carry, their parents too, up to $50,000, maybe even more for some families. Now, how will that happen? And she says she can do it without the Congress's support. We'll answer that question for you at 11:18. It's 10:15 on WGN. WGN America, we mentioned earlier, is going to launch this summer a national nightly 3-hour newscast from Chicago. Don't know who the lead anchor will be. I don't know who you think could be the Walter Cronkite of our day. Who would be that person? Because this is what they're going for, a factual, non-biased, non-political, non-talk showy deliverer of the news facts, just the news. If that idea sounds refreshing to you, you have some company, and WGN America is banking on that. They're spending some money. They're going to hire over 100 journalists in town, and somebody said, John, your pie-in-the-sky view won't go. It's going to be a money loser. But 708 said, can I get a job at this new news show? I have a show I want to put on called Just Answer the Damn Question. That would be a good segment on a show. Just Answer the Damn Question, where somebody's obfuscating and you say, please, just give me an answer to the damn question. We asked and answered the question from Jeopardy about families members between the ages of 18 and 34 who still live at home. This came up on Jeopardy last night. Did you see that? 18 to 34-year-olds in Italy, two-thirds of the 18 to 34-year-olds in Italy have not left the home. They still live with their parents. 630 said, I'm Italian. It's cultural. They build add-ins to their current home. And 219 said, most Italians believe you live at home until you marry. I suppose that's it. It's cultural. It's also financial. I honestly don't have any problem with that. Kathy and Judy, famously at this radio station for years, said the kids have got to leave the house. You can't continue to support the kids that way. Maybe their views have changed since the economics have changed a little bit these days. But if the kid is happy and you're happy and they're saving a little money, I'm not going to judge how you live your life or how close you want to be to your children. You do want them to launch at some point. But let's not keep score if somebody's 23-year-old is going to work from their old bedroom. Tim, you wanted to say what? You're on WGN Radio. How are you?
Hey, I wanted to talk about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. When I heard that Whitney Houston was being inducted, that really was the final straw for me. I'm a rock and roll purist, and you know, a few years ago they let Madonna in, which you know I tolerated that. Then last year Janet Jackson and the rap acts they've let in, but Whitney Houston, come on, what is rock and roll about her? You know, and you know, Pat Benatar didn't get in. Come on, what's up with this? You know, and Motorhead, and they were all, you know, nominated this year, but they didn't get in. But they let in Whitney Houston. What, you know?
And I said I have no problem with that, but it's because I, a long time ago, quit thinking that the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame was about rock and roll. It's about pop music. It's just about music, people. I mean, but I get your point completely. If it was, we almost need a different kind of Hall of Fame. Have the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and put Pat Benatar there. Then come up with something else for Whitney Houston. That would make you happy, right?
It would. Because I was there visiting when the announcements came out that Madonna was getting in, and I asked people around there, do you think she's rock and roll? They're like, no. And a lot of people were mad that Genesis hadn't been in yet by that point, you know, and Rush. You know, Rush finally got in a few years ago. But it's all about influence and everything. But
Tim, you know, give me your rock and roll. So give me some bands that are rock and roll. What's rock and roll to you?
Oh, I mean, that haven't been in there. Warren Zevon's never been considered. Great Ken Band, the Smithereens. There's so many out there that are like there's a band called the Long Riders. They invented the Americana genre back in the 80s.
I know. Wait a minute. Hall of Fame. I've never heard of them. So doesn't that tell? But doesn't that tell you something? If they're in the Hall of Fame, I should have at least heard about them, right?
Yeah. I mean.
You're missing my point. Some of these bands you're mentioning maybe shouldn't be in there because they didn't cut through enough. People like me don't even know them, right?
I know, but they, you know, they're in a lot of people's hearts, you know, and
yeah.
That's what the beautiful thing about music is. But you know, this rap music, I don't know how people get inspired by that. It's so complacent to me, you know. There's no, you know, I like loud guitars, and that's what rock and roll is. Guitars, drums, bass, keyboards. You know, it's not a turntable. You know what I mean?
So, I don't think know, any...
turntable isn't a music instrument.
Yeah.
I'm a purist.
That's,
you know,
okay. You don't have to apologize for that. You know, you and your interpretation of rock and roll came a long time before some of these DJs. So you...
I sound like an old fogey. I'm 56 years old. So,
All right, so I'm going to put you on an island. And you get one rock and roll band CD to go with you. What will it be?
I would have to say the Buddy Holly box set. Buddy Holly, I could listen to that every day and never get tired of it.
Not bad, you not know? Bad. All right.
Yep.
All right, buddy. Thanks, Tim.
Thanks,
I'm not king yet. Paperwork's tied up at Cook County. But when I am, we will visit this subject. Because Whitney Houston is not the same thing as Genesis. Right? They're not. It's apples and oranges. They're both fine, but they're just not the same thing. And I totally understand that. Jen, if I put you on an island and you get one rock and roll band to listen to, And remember, if it's some banging music, that's all you're going to listen to now. Maybe that's why the Buddy Holly box set's inspired. But you get one band to listen to for the rest of your time on the island. What will it be? For me, it would be Steely Dan. I'd like a little time to think about that, though. Anyway, that's a pretty good question. Incidentally, I was just looking at Twitter last night, and a guy named Will Lee tweeted this out. Hashtag TV fans, name a TV show you can watch anytime. Mine is Bewitched. I can watch any episode. Sam was the biz. Sam was the biz. She was one of my first childhood crushes. Samantha from Bewitched. She was so pretty. She'd winkle her nose. Magic would happen. Darren was funny. Their mother-in-law and uncle, Paul Lynn, were crazy. It was just a fun show. Mary Schmeek, the Pulitzer Prize winner from the Tribune, retweeted that with this excellent, urgent question from @MidnightCowboy. My answer, said Mary Schmeek, is Maverick. Who is the tall, dark stranger there? Maverick is his name. Riding the rails to who knows where. Luck is his companion. All right, Mary. So I need you to answer that question now for me, too. You're just sitting there. And by the way, Friends doesn't count. You cannot say Friends. And I don't know that it has to be past a certain point, but obviously these two went back quite a few years to Bewitched and Maverick. What was the show? What is the show that if it's on, you're happy? You could watch that like air. Some of the shows that come to mind for me right away, I don't know that they pop up all that much. For instance, there is a channel, I don't know which one it is, but it seems like they're always running Mad Men. If a Mad Men episode is on, I can watch that, and I will watch that. It's hard to turn one of those episodes off, especially for those of us who've watched it, because you go, oh, I love this scene. Oh, I love what happens next. I don't know that you remember Bewitched that way. Is there a show like that for you that's real obvious? 312-981-7200. Text that in for me now, please. 312-981-7200. Tell me that show that when it comes on, you can't not watch. One other thing we're going to do in the 11 o'clock hour. We visited with her before. Jamie Hanover is going to join us from Boss Vapes. She runs a vape store. She's an interesting lady, passionate about her livelihood. Why wouldn't she be? The Trump administration has cut back on flavored vapes. Have you been following this and what you, your kids, your family, your friends have access to? She's going to catch us up and tell us if this is a good idea or bad idea in the 11 o'clock hour. John, I'm a huge rap fan, but Notorious B.I.G. does not belong. He was amazing, but he was a rapper, not a rock and roller. I think there need to be wings to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Maybe there are, but I mean, I completely understand the point of the caller a little while ago who said, Whitney Houston, really? Are you kidding me? She was fine. She's beautiful. She was talented. She was tragic, but she's not a rock and roller. Hands down, Ted Nugent should be in the Hall of Fame. Ted Nugent is not in the Hall of Fame?
I don't know. Does the NRA have a Hall of Fame? How about the Bowhunters Hall of Fame? I think he's into that.
Hey, Smarty Pants, nobody asked you.
Oh, all right.
Phil Vitale's here, the restaurant critic for the Chicago Tribune, could you tell? By the way, about this new national nightly newscast of 3 hours originating from WGN America starting this summer, they have not announced a lead anchor on that. 331 texted in. Is that 331? They said Bill Curtis should do the national news. That would be a great show. I see Bill Curtis as a unbiased, fair, national journalist voice. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he still wants to get in that game. He's had his run in Chicago. He did 60 Minutes. I don't know if he wants to do that still, but if he does...
I know he does independent productions. I do hear that voice, and there's no mistaking that voice.
He's on national radio every week, mm-hmm. too. By the way, we were also asking, just clearing up a little business, Phil, before we go to some of your restaurant reviews. Mary Schmeek at the Tribune was retweeting somebody who said, what's the one TV show you can just always watch? And I'm putting the asterisk, Friends doesn't count. Mm. Bewitched, somebody said. Mary Schmeek loves Maverick. Anytime Maverick comes up, you could just sit there and isn't that fun? Doesn't that take you to a nice, happy place? Not even nostalgia, but just it's a fun little show to watch and you don't worry about the world. Joni wanted to say what? Joni, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hi. My show is Dick Van Dyke Show.
That's perfect. Mm-hmm. That's perfect. That is exactly what I'm feeling.
Me too. I just think it was so good. Great cast.
It's always a great show when somebody, when the show starts and you go, oh, that's the one where, and you know what happens, and you sit and watch it anyway.
You still want to watch.
You still watch
it. You can't wait until...
I wonder if he'll get over that Ottoman this time. No, he didn't.
Right.
All right, so never get tired of it.
The all-time greatest Dick Van Dyke episode is...
Mel Brady's toupee. Alan Brady's toupee.
Alan Brady's. I'm thinking of the Walnuts episode, which is the scary dream sequence that they had. But does one come to mind for you, Joni?
Yes. The one where Rob gets hypnotized unknowingly, and every time the bell rings, he thinks he's drunk, and he's falling down drunk, and then the bell rings, and he's back to being straight.
Great physical comedian.
You remember that one? Mm-hmm.
I do. And you know, it's funny because I think this will pop up when we get nostalgic. Some of the shows that we remember so fondly are not as politically correct, right? Like, I don't think we laugh at drunkenness today the way we used to back then.
Right, Foster Brooks.
Foster Brooks comes to mind. Absolutely. Yeah. Foster Brooks was so funny, but his whole thing was... What was like that?
And
he was just this drunk
stifled
guy.
Burp. Yeah,
yeah, thick. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Joni, yeah. Thanks for the phone call.
Oh, thank you. Love your show.
I love you. Thank you for joining us. Murder, She Wrote. Frasier is a good, more modern version of a show that was really fun, really funny, really clever every single time.
Yep.
MASH and Cheers, John. Golden Girls, MASH. Twilight Zone. Yeah, I would not... I haven't seen Twilight Zone in forever, but all of a sudden that does sound like kind of fun, doesn't it?
Right. Well, Twilight Zone is always every episode is a universe unto itself, whereas the other shows we're talking about are continuations where the characters are the same or developed slightly, and you see them in different situations. But it's always Dick Van Dyke and Laura Petrie. It's always this. You know, it's always Buddy Sorrell. You know, so you get kind of those. I think Modern Family is going to get into that nostalgia level in maybe a dozen years.
Everybody Loves Raymond is there for some people.
Yeah.
And somebody just texted that in. Phil Vitale reviews restaurants for the Chicago Tribune, as well as offers political commentary and thoughts about television shows.
Mm-hmm. Or pretty much anything. You know, turn the mic on and watch out.
Woodwind and Avanzare have appeared in the one that I alluded to that's getting a lot of interest from people is this Avanzare, which is in Lombard. So to those of you that say Phil doesn't do enough suburban restaurants...
Well, I got this one.
You say Lombard.
I say Lombard.
Avanzare, you give it 2 stars. You say it's conversation friendly. Here's an interesting line. You say, you'd think after more than 30 years on the job, I'd never be wowed again by a chicken parmesan. But Avanzare's version is terrific. And then you describe the tomato sauce, the bursts of concentrated flavor. You like the veal limon. Another expertly executed classic, you write. You like the risotto. And they make their own breads and pizzas there, too, huh?
Yeah. No, they're doing everything from
scratch. This is Italian, then, huh?
This is Italian. These are three partners who have long and deep Chicago roots in mostly Italian restaurants, dating all the way back, say, to the Como Inn in Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
And they, after years and years of working for other people, suddenly they got together and said, you know, we could be the bosses for a change. And they... opened, they found this, for them, perfect location on Roosevelt Road in Lombard, and it was a space in very good shape. They didn't have to do much to the dining room at all. They added a wood-burning oven so they could do pizzas in the back. And, these are veteran chef. There's a veteran chef who's been cranking out this kind of food for probably more than 20 years, and they know what they're doing.
Yeah. 2 stars, which is an excellent review and rating by you. And the price, Italian's usually pretty affordable, right?
Yeah, most, and unless you're going into the whole fish or the big super duper veal dishes, you're probably at the low 20s for most of the main courses, and probably a little cheaper than that if you stick to the pastas.
Appetizers include timbalo of eggplant rolled around a ricotta spinach filling. Estrada likens it to be a vegetarian and gluten-free manicotti. Frito Misto offers a carefully, lightly fried melange of seafood and zucchini with the light marinara sauce. Clams with linguine is appropriately garlicky, supported by a weighty seafood broth.
Yeah, not just one of those little tepid little thin sauces underneath it, but, you know, it's got some strength to it.
You like the desserts there, too?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, everything. I mean, there's you look at the menu and you open the first page and you're like, I've seen all of this before. they're not doing any sleight of hand.
I'm okay with that myself.
But then you see the way they execute it and you realize, well, you know, there's a reason they're still making chicken parmesan these days.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because when you do it right,
it's a good thing.
That's a good dish.
You know, well, we go to Italian restaurants a lot because we're Americans. I get spaghetti and red sauce. I get spaghetti and marinara sauce or meatballs. I get spaghetti and a meat sauce way too much. Everybody at the table looks at me like, here he goes again. Mm-hmm. But guess what? I like spaghetti. In fact, I could tell you where the good spaghettis are and the bad spaghettis. I'm the spaghetti expert.
The spaghetti
Chicago
whisperer.
Chicago Italian. I'm the spaghetti whisperer.
Spaghetti.
Do these people have spaghetti on their menu, Phil?
I don't recall. Of course they have spaghetti. I just don't know what form it takes.
Yeah, so you didn't spend time on the spaghetti because you were trying the... A little more interesting stuff.
And there's only so many things. I mean, they've got a dozen pastas on the menu. I'm not going to eat a dozen pastas.
Oh, you should.
I'm going to have I'm going to move around a little bit.
You reviewed the restaurant at the Feinberg School of Medicine at Northwestern University?
I did.
So, like these giant medical complexes, and sometimes they have a restaurant in there. You reviewed that?
Right. Yeah, you go into the Feinberg, and you take the elevator to the 18th floor, and there you are.
Woodwind, downtown Chicago.
This is the same space that was home for about a year and change to a restaurant called Green River, which, oddly enough, was also one word with the second word capitalized in the middle of a word.
Woodwind.
And this is
Green
Woodwind
River.
With two doubles, two capital W's. And these people moved in, and they're cooking. I mean, the chef who is there received a Michelin star for his work at Temperis.
It just seems so weird to me to say, hey, let's go downtown and eat. Where are we going to eat? Well, let's go to the Feinberg School of Medicine, and upstairs they've got a restaurant. That sounds institutional.
It does. And when you walk into the lobby, you're not going to be... That's not going to shake your impression. But they do have a desk in the lobby and with the name of the restaurant, and there's someone there who can check you in and tell you which elevator to board. And then once you get up there, then it's, oh, now I'm in a restaurant. Now this feels like a warm, cozy, welcoming restaurant.
Is it worth the time, effort, energy, expense? I mean, is it a good place?
No. It's very, very good. And while we see School of Medicine, we think of it as that huge Northwestern Health Center complex.
Yeah.
Still, there's an awful lot of residential around there, and the owner says that's kind of what he's going for, the residential and then also the private event space, the private event market.
Oh, yeah, right, you know?
When the summer comes up, they have a balcony, so they have a nice little area where you can be outside.
Speaking my language.
Mm-hmm. And some view, although it's kind of the view of the high-rise right across the way, but it's a view.
What do you want to eat? Where do you want to go? Or is there some place you want to tell us about? 312-981-7200. Call or text right now. Phil's in the studio, 1043. This is WGN. It's your turn. 1047 WGN. Phil Vitale's the restaurant critic of the Chicago Tribune. Phil, texts are still coming in about two things. One is your thoughts about Italian restaurants in Chicago. And number two, who should and should not be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a restaurant Hall of Fame?
Not to my knowledge. There's a Chicago Chefs Hall of Fame. It doesn't have a physical space yet, but they have elected some members, and they do fundraisers from time to time, and they're trying to
Everybody knows rock and roll because it's global, but restaurants tend to be, with some exception, really local.
Right.
So maybe people in San Francisco don't know about the great restaurant in Chicago, and vice versa.
Right. San Franciscan probably knows about of maybe two restaurants in Chicago.
What do you think they are?
Oh, I would say there's probably Alinea and Frontera Grill.
Would they know Gibson's? We mentioned them last week.
They might.
Would Gibson's be in the Restaurant Hall of Fame?
They'd be in the Chicago Restaurant Hall of Fame if we had one.
Alinea would be.
Mm-mm. Yeah. Gibson's is, they don't get known as well because they're about the only major steakhouse that has never expanded beyond its own city. Except for, I mean, the airport doesn't count to me as, you know, and Oak Brook doesn't count.
Yeah.
But they've... You know, they've turned down offers to go to Vegas, to go to Miami, wherever. They could open one of those any day now.
I'm kind of intrigued by the idea. If they had a national a restaurant Hall of Fame. Problem, too, is they turn over, right? So
right. Nothing lasts forever. That's all right.
Whitney Houston music will be there forever, but if that restaurant is in the Hall of Fame and then they close their doors, it's kind of pointless.
Right. You can go to a baseball Hall of Fame and probably find footage of Cal Ripken playing baseball, but you probably aren't going to sit there and watch you know, Charlie Trotter make a dinner, even though he's not here anymore.
John Notice, REO Speedwagon, Notice Sticks, come on. Where was the other text? A bunch of them came in about this. We always get this one. Rap is degrading garbage. Hands down, Ted Nugent should be in the Hall of Fame. John, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame should be rebranded as the Music Hall of Fame.
Hmm.
Maybe that would satisfy these purists out there.
Yeah, and all those Beethoven lovers who are storming the gates wanting wanting Ludwig in. Come on.
Text about the... hold on a second, Phil. I've got all these pages in front of me, and I just lost this one. Do they have limoncello at this Italian restaurant we were just talking about?
I did not see it on the menu. I did not look very hard at the after-dinner drink options. It would seem like it's such an easy thing to get and such an easy thing to make that there's a pretty good chance they have it, but I can't confirm that.
David said, John, spaghetti is bad simple carbs. Well, all pasta's bad simple carbs.
Right. So if I twist it in a better shape, you feel better about it?
I know, you snob. I mean, come on. If it's in a ravioli shape, that's a little more sophisticated.
It's flour and water and sometimes some egg. Get over it.
And then I put some tasty stuff on it, and I like to eat that food.
Exactly.
John, what's up with Ed DeBevix?
Ed DeBevix closed its original location because the property was sold, and they're putting up a big building, of course. And they closed, and they said they might not go away completely. They might come back, and they've been tossing out rumors that they are taking over a space at the corner of St. Clair and Ohio. That would be the southwest corner where there used to be a copy store or something like that.
Okay, so people who don't know Ed DeBevix, what is that?
Ed DeBevix is like a recreation 50s diner where the waiter's shtick is to insult you and like to snap their fingers, like, come on, order, I haven't got all day, and similar things like that. And if you're in the right frame of mind, that's fun, and if you have the right sense of humor, you will insult them back and get a thing going.
Is the food good at that place? Was it?
The food was okay. When Rich Melman ran it, it had some really good stuff, including a burger, because Rich is always serious about his hamburgers. And so you go into a Melman restaurant, there's always going to be a good burger, at least back in the old days.
But the food wasn't the feature, and you could tell that.
You went there for the shakes and the burgers and the fries and the insults.
It was that kind of menu. Is there an Ed DeBevix up and running right now?
No.
So it was just the one?
There was one very, very briefly on the North Shore. And that lasted, I think, less than a year. And
people don't like being insulted up there?
I don't know. You know, I think it was up like Glenview or something like that. It was a strange
location. That is kind of funny. I mean, it would seem to be like not only do you need the right people, but you need the right location. People that will be gravitated to that shtick, and it's close enough that they'll get in the car and drive there for a burger and a shake and the comedy, right?
Exactly.
So the new Ed DeBevix, I presume, will have the same attitude?
There would be no reason to reopen otherwise. If they opened up simply straight, how are you, here's your burger, it'll be dead in an hour.
847 said, what about Etoile in Madison?
Etoile is a very, very famous restaurant. It's been around, I'm going to have to say, 20 years, probably more. They've won a James Beard Award. They're one of the great icons of Wisconsin fine dining.
Yeah, friends of ours who are total foodies. When they come to Chicago, they lived in LaGrange Park with us for years. Now they live out of state, but they come through the city a lot. And when they do, they go to the best restaurants. They go to Etoile when they were in Madison and just rave about it. I have not been there, but we've had nice dining experiences in Madison, either for old fashions or Wisconsin supper club style food.
No, I think it's a great place.
It is. It's a fun town.
And so is Milwaukee.
And Etoile, if I go there, is worth it if I want extraordinary dining and a pretty big paycheck too, right?
Oh, yeah.
John, what was the name of that restaurant that you guys were talking about in Lombard again?
It's Avanzare.
A-V-A-N-Z-A-R-E. Avanzare.
It's Italian for go forward. And for them, for the owners, that was a step up since they were employees now. And once upon a time, there was a restaurant called Avanzare downtown. No relation to this new one. But when it opened, the original chef at Avanzare was the late Dennis Terzak. And he actually grew up in Lombard. So now there's an Avanzare. The original chef in Terzak of Avanzare lived in Lombard, where there's now an Avanzare, and that blows your mind or it doesn't.
Well, whatever you said, yes. Steve, you're on WGN. What can we do for you, Steve? You're on the air.
The Ed DeBevix was in Deerfield on Lake Cook Road, and it was there for many years. it wasn't just a year. And I think there used to be one in the western suburbs, too, though I never made it out there.
Did you like that food? Did you like that shtick?
I liked the shtick. We had our daughter's Sweet 16 there. It was a great party there.
Oh, yeah, I'll bet that was. I've been to Ed DeBevick's once. I remember it. Mm-hmm. I remember it was really fun, funny. The waitress was dynamite. I never felt compelled to go back, right? Like, it would never be to me a favorite restaurant where we always want to go and eat. Well, but maybe that wasn't their idea anyway.
Right, it could be. I mean, I agree with you. Once you've done it once, you kind of get it. But if it really resonates, then why the heck not? And as he mentioned, and thank you for the correction, by the way. I was always mistaken. You know, it's great, like entry level for young kids. If you're going to go out to a restaurant and you're going to want a little food that's good enough for you, the adult, but also entertain the kids, in why not?
Yeah.
Very family friendly.
Was it a hit for you guys, huh, Steve?
Yeah, it was. It was great to bring kids. I'm waiting for that to open up. I'll bring my grandsons.
Yeah, that would be fun. That would be funny. Thanks for the call, Steve. You have a good day.
Okay, bye.
Hey, John, can you recommend prime rib in the southwest suburbs that's not super expensive? Okay, so we've narrowed that down for you, Phil Vitale.
Yeah.
You may have to head north and a little east if you're in the southwest suburbs for prime rib. And I don't want to spend more than $9.
That's the trouble. You know, not too expensive is a really vague term. So that'll vary with people. I will say I don't trust prime rib that's too inexpensive. Because you don't know what you're getting, but that's
or it's said, really thin cut.
Very, very. Yeah, you know, some people like the double stack thin cut.
Oh yeah.
There's I'm trying to think of the good Southwest steakhouse that might have prime rib.
Just come into town and go to Lowry's. What the heck? Although you know, I've been thinking about this, Phil. And by the way, 312-981-7200. Call or text, and maybe there's a spot that you're yelling into your radio right now, saying, "Oh, for goodness sakes!" In the southwest suburbs, for a family value price for prime rib, you got to go to X. 312-981-7200. But speaking of Lowry's, last time we were there, Phil, and we go, you're raising your hand. You got a spot?
Yeah, Crapel Steakhouse in Worth. That's the one I was trying to think of. I would call ahead to make sure they have prime rib. They have good steaks. It's a very pretty place.
How do you spell that?
K-R-A-P-I-L, apostrophe S, steakhouse and patio. It's in Worth, Illinois, and it is worth going to.
Get it? Worth?
I didn't do it. It's just sitting right here.
Oh, wow.
I know.
I'll have to tell you my story about a letter I want to write to a restaurant. I want them to do a better job. And I wonder if that will work. And I don't know who to write to. And I don't know if anybody would read it and follow up or say, hey, you're right. We dropped the ball. We need to do a better job. Do you think they're interested in a letter like that or an email?
Yes. Hmm. If they're any good, yes.
Okay, then I'll tell you that story next week. We're out of time today. Nice to see you, Phil Vitale.
Thank you.
You want to read more about these restaurants Phil's been talking about, chicagotribune.com/dining. That's where Phil Vitale lives. They put his stuff in the print edition, too, which I think is a really good idea. It's nice to see you, Phil.
Thank you. Nice to be seen.
11:10, WGN, busy day. They had the Democratic debate last night. I don't know who won. I was watching the analysis afterwards. They said, well, this person scored points, that person scored points. One person who is making news, of course, is the Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren exchange. But Elizabeth Warren was on my radar before the debate last night because this is a story I think I'm reading from AP, January 14th. Presidential candidate Elizabeth Warren says she wants to cancel up to $50,000 in college loans for most people on her first day in office without waiting for congressional approval. I'll just keep reading. Elizabeth Warren said she will order her Secretary of Education, if she becomes president, to cancel up to $50,000 in college debt for about 95% of student borrowers on her first day in office. Everybody says that, right? My first day in office, I'm going to get affordable health care. My first day in office, I'm going to build the wall. Her first day in office, trillions of dollars of debt is going to go away. Your student loan evaporates. This would erase the outstanding loans for about 42 million Americans. Democratic senator from Massachusetts vowed in a proposal released Tuesday to act immediately and not wait for congressional approval because the Secretary of Education has broad authority to compromise on and modify student loans. Okay, there's a lot there. Maybe you'd love that if somebody would do it for you. Maybe you object to it in principle. Maybe you both. Ray Kaplan is the attorney that comes on with us frequently and talks about student loans and borrowing and paying them back. I asked Ray to swing by and comment on this. Welcome back, Ray. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks. How are you?
What do you think of this?
I have a lot of opinions on this. And
did you read her proposal?
I did. I read her proposal. I watched the debates last night, and then I looked up her proposal, and I have a very good, I think, understanding of it.
Do I describe it correctly here, what she's up to?
Yes. So she estimates that it will cost about $1.25 trillion. And just to give you an idea, the Treasury reported income from income tax from 2018 as $1.7 trillion. So this plan alone will cost $1.25 trillion. And you know that that's probably a little on the low side.
Does that mean that that's the amount of money that is out there that has been borrowed and is due to be paid back?
Well, it means that the amount that would be collected, that's what it would cost. So there's a big, big impact that it would have on our budget. And there are a lot of questions about whether or not the Department of Ed actually has this kind of broad authority.
Okay, but stop right there for a second, Ray. That's the amount of money that is owed.
Yes.
That is the amount of money that would be paid. But that's the amount of money that the government or these lenders would not get that they are due.
Right.
$1.2 trillion.
Right. It's a lot of money.
Okay.
And is that all money owed to the Department of Ed, to the federal government?
That's to the federal government? That's not to Chase?
Right. Not to private lenders, just to the Department of Education. So it's money that's owed to the federal government that she would be able to forgive.
We're already, what is it, $14 trillion in debt? Now we're going to just add another one to that?
$20 trillion in debt. So, yes, that is one of my issues with it, is that I think that, if you read her plan, she's also proposing free universal tuition for two-year college and four-year college, and she estimates that that will cost, in addition to this $1.25 trillion, $70 billion per year on top of the $1.25 trillion.
Is that $1.25 over 10 years, or is that 1 year?
10 years.
10 years. So $700 billion, did you say, or $70 billion?
$70
times
billion
10
per year.
Is 70 times 10 is $700 billion, so 0.7 trillion add
right.
to that. So her plan is over $2 trillion over 10 years.
Right. Then the other issue I have with it is that when you look at who it helps, so the plan only benefits those who've actually gone to college, right?
Yeah.
And those people generally fare much better in our economy. So this plan, actually, the top 40% of households going by income would get 2/3 of the savings from Warren's plan, while the bottom 20% would collect only 4% of the savings.
Do that again.
Okay. So the top 40% of households going by income would get 2/3 of the savings from Warren's plan.
2/3 of the savings go to the top 40% wage earners.
Right, while the bottom 20% would collect 4% of the savings.
Oh, that's too bad.
So basically, why are those who went to college more deserving of aid than those who did not?
Yeah.
And, you know, when you take a look at who does this help, it basically helps college-educated people who make $100,000 or less per year, and actually even people who make more than $100,000 per year still get a ton of forgiveness.
Yeah, that's not a small point. So there's an income cap on hers, which I think there should be.
$250,000.
At $100,000, it starts to graduate down, right?
Or right.
Recede.
So more than $100,000, your forgiveness declines $1 for every $3 of income above $100,000.
But this is not for the... But most college graduates, recent college graduates who are paying off their loans aren't earning $100,000 yet. So if I'm making less than $100,000, I qualify for $50,000 in student loan forgiveness. That's literally written away.
Right.
If I make a little bit more, then I get a little bit less off.
Right. Here's the other problem, is that under our current tax code, when you have debt forgiveness, that's calculated as taxable income by the IRS. So the IRS will say that $50,000 you just got in loan forgiveness is actually part of your gross income. So you get taxed on that as income. What she's saying is that this is going to be tax-free forgiveness, which entails changing the tax code as well.
But that's another interesting point. I'm glad you mentioned that. In the past, when you get loan forgiveness, in other words, it's like we wrote you an invisible check,
mm-hmm.
and then you pay off your debt, the debt goes away. We didn't do that, but we'll conclude that debt forgiveness was income you received. So if I got $50,000 in student aid forgiveness, then I would pay taxes on $50,000. I'd owe $10,000-$15,000, something like that.
Right.
This wouldn't even charge you that.
That's what she's proposing, but there are real questions as to whether or not that's something that you can do, because there's something called the, well, there's the Office of Management and Budget, which has to be consulted with anything that an administrative agency like the Department of Ed would do, where there are restrictions on the ability for these administrative agencies from doing things that would significantly increase spending, which I think we can all agree that this would be a significant increase.
We'll pause here. 312-981-7200. Do you like this idea? Tell me this. How much student debt do you or your kids have? And if you've got a specific question about how best to manage that, well, that's Ray's specialty. So 312-981-7200. If you have kids who are going back to school or are for the first time going to school, who should borrow the money first? Should you put it in the kid's name? Should you put it in the parent's name? What kind of loan should you get? These are the sorts of things Ray always talks to us about. And here's your chance to chime in. Listen, I think college should be free. This is me. You and I have had this conversation before.
Right.
I think at least a public university up to a certain point is certain as going to high school is not only free but mandatory up to a certain age. I think that we should provide at least to the 14th grade free college education. Times have changed. A high school diploma isn't what it used to be. So let's ensure that all of us have equal access to at least a junior college or trade school education. We don't do that. I would do that. But to me, this is not only expensive, but I'm not even sure in principle I like it. I think if you owe money, you owe money. Okay, it's your turn. 312-981-7200. Well, this is weird. All of our phone lines are ringing. Huh. If you're looking to purchase a new home or refinance your existing home, call Team Hochberg in December. Team Hochberg helped listeners convert $1.8 million of their home equity to pay off credit cards, car loans, medical bills, collections, judgments. It saved our listeners over $24,000 a month. Last year, Team Hochberg reduced listeners' payments over $196,000 a month for an annualized savings of over $2.3 million. This is Hochberg crunching the numbers, but it's true. This is what he's doing right now. Team Hochberg helped listeners pay off debt and save over $2.3 million. Your debt isn't going to disappear. So if you'd like to pay off your debt and substantially reduce your monthly payments, call Team Hochberg. Do a cash-out refi. Seriously, what are you waiting for? Call Team Hochberg, 855-56-DAVID, or visit 56david.com. Team Hochberg's helped thousands of our listeners. They can't help you if you don't call. 855-56-DAVID, or visit 56david.com. Homeside Financials, an equal housing lender. Their NMLS ID number is 1124061. Ray Kaplan is an attorney with the Kaplan Law Firm. What a coincidence. She's in our studio. I noticed that Elizabeth Warren wants to forgive 95% of the debt that people owe out there. And for 42 million Americans who owe up to $50,000, it would instantly disappear. And if that sounds good for you, maybe this is the strategy, Ray, that if I don't have to pay that off, I'm going to buy food and sneakers and medicine and clothes and maybe afford a house.
Right.
So that money gets churned back into the economy. I think that's a fair...
I agree. I think that that's a fair assessment of what the potential upside would be, in that you're freeing up a lot of money to be paid into the economy. I think it would have a really nice psychological effect, but I think the actual unforeseen consequences to the budget and fiscally would be bad.
We have to start talking about the $20 trillion. We are leaving our, forget your grandkids, you're leaving your kids a time bomb.
Yeah.
I think we're leaving
per person $12,000 or something like that.
Imagine that. And that's, and you may say, I've got $12,000. Does your kid have $12,000? Do your grandparents have everybody?
Right.
Pick up some phone lines?
Sure.
We'll start with George. You're on WGN Radio. George, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, good. You're on the air. Go.
Thank you. George from Arlington Heights. So my girlfriend and I are going to be getting married here pretty soon, and right now she's got about $65,000 in student debt. That's with her master's degree she's currently getting, as well as her bachelor's. So basically, my question is, we want to maximize how we could pay that off as fast as possible. I know there's individual line items within that Stafford loan that I'm not really sure of, but I'm wondering how we should, pay this off as quick as possible.
Hi, George. So I think what we want to do is analyze whether or not it's a good idea to pay it off as quickly as possible, because I'm assuming it's federal loans, right?
That's correct. And she's actually getting her master's right now. So that means her student loans are on, I believe it's deferment.
Right.
I actually don't have student loans myself. So I want to learn as best as possible, too, for, you know, the future.
Yeah, I get it. A lot of people don't want to have that hanging over them. What's your advice?
My advice is to, once she's out of school, is to enroll her in an income-driven payment plan, which would mean that 10% of her discretionary income would go to the payments, and then the balance is forgiven after a certain period.
And that might be as long as 10 years, and then you've got to be willing to live with that, but maybe better that you live with that for 10 years, a modest payment, rather than trying to come up with 60 grand.
It generally saves people a ton of money.
But people hate the idea of this 60,000 following them month after month.
It's just, honestly, think of it as a cell phone payment, because that's what it generally amounts to.
Do you know what your payments will be if you guys started paying when she graduates, George?
I mean, roughly, I would say, you know, our payment would be like roughly $400 per month.
Does that sound about right to you?
You said $80,000?
$65,000.
Yeah. Well, if you're in an income-driven plan, it would be, if she's in an income-driven plan, make sure it's only based on her income, not both of your incomes, because that, under the statute, is just supposed to be the borrower's income. So you probably can reduce that payment further and get much more forgiveness. And if she goes into the public sector, it's forgiven after 10 years, and she'll get a ton of public sector loan forgiveness.
Thanks for the call, George. Good luck to you. I'll give a phone number and email address or website for our guest in just a minute. Laura had a question. You're on WGN, Laura.
Oh, hi. Hi, this is Laura from Mount Prospect. I've got a daughter who just started her first real job after college graduate, and her income level is less than $30,000, and she's supposed to start repaying her loans in February.
How much does she owe?
$28,000.
Okay.
She'll likely have a very low income-driven payment plan, too, maybe less than $100 a month or so.
But do you suggest she go on the income-driven repayment plan, or wait and defer until she's making more money?
No, I would suggest that she go ahead and enroll in the income-driven payment plan, because the payment, again, it's going to be that 10% of discretionary income. It's going to be very, very low.
Thanks for the call, Laura. I'm just sprinting through some calls because we're nearly out of time, and I want to get as many voices on as we can, including Joyce. You're on WGN. Joyce, go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I am adamantly opposed to this, mainly for the simple reason that what about all those people that went to the academies and are paying back a ROTC scholarship? A lot of military people are paying back time into the service because their education was paid for by a scholarship from us taxpayers.
Yeah, that's the trade. You do the time, and then we'll pay the loan.
Right.
There's people who decided not to serve our country, and they're going to get forgiveness, too.
You mean under Warren's plan?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. There are fundamental fairness questions about this plan. I mean, there may even be lawsuits for brought by students who paid their loans and couldn't benefit from this. So that's something else that they're going to have to look out for.
847 said, free college. I want my 21 trillion dollars back. Yeah, I understand how look, I think what she's doing is pie in the sky. She's trying to get elected president. A lot of people have loans, so she said, elect me president, I'll make your loans go away. I don't know that that's going to work, but I think that's what that is. Ray Kaplan, what's the website for your law firm?
financialrelief.com.
financialrelief.com, or you can call 312-294-8989.
Exactly.
financialrelief.com. Thanks for coming in, Ray.
Absolutely.
This is John Williams, and on a phone line is a guest that's been on with us before, Jamie Havanar. Hey, Jamie, it's John Williams. Welcome back to the show. How have you been?
Very good. How about you?
What's the name of your business there, Jamie?
It is Boss Vapes LLC.
Mm-hmm. And is that in LaSalle, Illinois?
LaSalle, Ottawa, and Mendota, Illinois, yes.
So if I wanted to swing by and pick up some vapes, what's the best way to get? I-80 West? Is that what I do?
From Chicago, your Chicago area, right?
Yeah, it's going to be a drive. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, 55 South to 80 West.
And then what do I turn left on?
Well, we have two exits right off the interstate, so.
Yeah. I want to read to you and to our listeners what was reported last week in The Hill. The Trump administration has announced a limited ban on certain flavors of cartridge-based e-cigarettes, stopping short of completely eliminating all types of vaping products, which were being suggested by Illinois Congressman Dick Durbin was behind it. Raja Krishnamurthy was behind it. Let's stop selling these vapes, period. The new policy was intense, and it was looked like the Trump administration was going to go that direction, too. But now they're going to ban certain flavors. The new policy was intended as a targeted move aimed only at the products health officials said put teens at risk. It was prompted by federal data that showed that more than 5 million middle and high school students reported using e-cigarettes within a 30-day window. Most of the students said they use cartridge-based products. So let's go after the products the kids are using. And Elif, I don't remember, but Raja was talking about this when he was on with us. What percentage of high school-age kids vape or, you know, have in the last 30 days? That's the way they calculated. And it seemed to me like it was... The number staggered me. It was over 25%. Elif, see if you can find that, okay? The move was immediately panned by Democrats, as well as anti-tobacco groups, who accused the administration of caving to the tobacco industry. The announcement is a victory for free market groups and the vaping industry, which pressured the administration to change the course from its earlier decision over concerns that a total flavor ban would put independent vape shops like our guests out of business. The administration will strip the market of popular fruit and mint-flavored pods, but not tobacco and menthol. So the kids like the flavored ones. Nobody is going to be able to get them, even adults. But the adults might be addicted to tobacco, so we're going to continue to make tobacco-flavored vapes available, and for the same reason, menthol. So, Jamie, that's where we are on this right now. Is that right?
Yeah, pods have been eliminated.
Pod. But you can sell a tobacco or a menthol pod at your place, right?
We don't sell pods, but we could if we wanted to.
So do you think this is a good idea, Jamie, what they're doing, cutting the kids' flavors out then?
I mean, for them to get peace of mind, it's worth a shot, but it's not going to work. People aren't addicted to the flavors. They're addicted to 50 milligrams of nicotine, which is what's in those pods. So, I mean, they can try it if they want, but they're going to see... They're going to see that's not working, that it's 50 milligrams of nicotine.
Not the flavor, but I guess the flavor is what's attractive to some of those kids. But are you saying that if I'm doing the bubble gum or the watermelon or whatever, what are some of the flavors we're talking about? What are some of the popular flavors, Jamie?
Everything. What's your favorite fruit?
Watermelon, apples.
Watermelon. There's anywhere from fresh watermelon to watermelon, like, I don't want to say Jolly Rancher because that's trademarked, but like watermelon candy flavored. There's watermelon mixed with strawberries. There's watermelon bubblegum. There's all different types of flavors. Like, your favorite fruit is watermelon. You could have it. What's your favorite candy?
Yeah, I like, I don't know, Snicker bar. I like...
It was a Snickers flavor.
Are you kidding me? Really?
No. So instead of you eating a Snickers at night, if you wanted to vape it, you could.
What about, how about this? Do they have Swedish Fish or Sour Patch Kids?
They definitely do.
I'm not sure how I feel about that. And in those pods, do those flavored pods have the nicotine that you're talking about as well?
Yes.
Well, why not just make the flavored pods take the nicotine out, and then people don't get addicted, right?
Exactly. That's what I've been saying the last three times I've been on the show. In the UK, they limit the amount of nicotine in the pods to 18 milligrams, because then you're not... They're going to see, even with a flavor ban, kids are not... They're addicted to the high of a 50 milligrams nicotine. They're not addicted to a flavor. They're going to sell just as many pods as they did before. They're just going to sell mint and tobacco flavored.
Or is this possible too, Jamie? Or, I don't know if this market exists, but or they'll buy black market versions of it that...
Most definitely.
...have the flavor but are less regulated. That's where we've been getting into trouble, right?
Yes. Yes.
Now, you said you don't sell the pods, is that right?
Correct.
Well, I'm sorry, I'm confused. I thought that's what you vape. What do you sell then?
We sell, it's an open system, so you get a bottle of juice and you put it into your device.
Do you keep going? Yeah.
The only thing that was eliminated by Trump is pre-filled pods, Juuls, the pre-filled pods that are pre-filled. I can fill my own tank. Like, I don't use a pod. I use a tank. So, and I don't use 30 or 50 milligrams of nicotine. I use 3. I have an open system.
So, really, do you set the amount of nicotine that you include
in
your
my tank?
Really, you've got a tank. You've got liquid, and people come and refill their devices. Is that it?
They come and buy a bottle of juice to refill their own devices, correct.
Is that a big part of the market or a small part of the market?
Huge part of the market.
I thought the vapes, I thought the Juuls and all those things were where everybody was doing it.
I guess it depends on what area you're in. Yeah.
But where you are, people come by and refill. They buy the liquid and put it in their own containers, huh?
Correct.
And then, and you personally can set the amount of nicotine that is in your liquid?
Absolutely. Huh. That's the whole point of it. So you start out at the same as what's in a cigarette, which is approximately 18 milligrams, and then you work your way down. So once I've done 18 and I've quit smoking, then you lower yourself to like a 12, a 6, a 3, and a 0, and then you just don't use nicotine at all. That's the point. It's a step-down system.
I guess
with
I can.
Pods,
yeah, cool. Go ahead.
Yeah. With pods, they lock you in to, like, Juul only does a 50 milligram nicotine. So it gets you to quit smoking, but it also keeps you on their products because there's no step down.
50. Did you say 50?
50.
Wow. All right. But then, so you can set the amount of nicotine that you want in that. Does this administration move affect the amount of nicotine? You could put 60 in there if you wanted, couldn't you?
I mean, you could. I don't think you physically could, but could.
Well, here's my point. And yours are, and you offer flavors as well?
Correct.
Okay, so mm-hmm. while they're limiting the pre-packaged ones, mm-hmm. there you are able to completely get around it. It doesn't sound like they're impacting you. Is that right?
Correct.
All right, so if I say, okay, good, the United States Congress and President got that thing done, we've banned flavored vapes. No, we mm-hmm. haven't. It's the prepackaged kind, and if I go to Boss Vapes in LaSalle, I'll be able to still get exactly what they're trying to keep people from getting, correct?
No. What they're trying to stop people from getting is 50 milligrams of nicotine. Ours only go up to 18.
Yeah, but I mean, that's okay, fine, and thank you for that. But mm-hmm. you could do 25 if you wanted. You could do more. I mean,
through the FDA, we only registered up to 18 milligrams, so we're only allowed to make 18 milligrams.
How unusual is your shop in that, Jamie? I mean, on the one hand, you're trading on this business that some people think is a nasty habit. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, you seem to be very interested in limiting the nicotine and giving people a way to get off cigarettes.
Well, most definitely. I mean, like, I've said this 3 times. I've been on your show and 3 times. I've said this. We need to follow in the footsteps of the UK. The UK has vaping down. They really do. This should never be seen as a nasty habit. It's not something somebody should pick up. It should be something somebody's using as a tool to get off of smoking. It's a smoking cessation device, just like a patch, just like the gum, like Wellbutrin, except that there's none of the side effects that those have. Wellbutrin, there's people who have committed suicide taking that, who have went, I mean, absolutely crazy taking that and killed themselves.
Yeah.
You don't have that with this. This fulfills the hand to mouth. This gets, you know what I'm saying, every aspect of the smoking, and then you lower your nicotine to where you're off vaping. We have so many people who have come in. I think, what is our oldest, Wes, 78-year-old man who smoked since he was 6 years old in Kentucky. You know what I'm saying? Like, he said he started smoking when he was 6 years old. His daughter bought him one for Father's Day and has worked him all the way down to no nicotine. I haven't seen him in a year. He had totally quit smoking, quit vaping.
Wow.
Like, that's what it's intended for. It's
I'm glad to hear that. But hear this then, too. On a phone line, Boss Vapes owner, this is a store in the far western suburbs of Chicago, Jamie Havener. So that's good for those people and that guy. But Elif looked it up. It's 25%. 1 in 4 high school kids vapes. 1 in 4 high school kids doesn't smoke. It's not even close anymore. The point being that those kids aren't buying these products to quit smoking. They're picking up this as an original habit. So I think that's the problem that all of us have with that. And I wonder what your thought is about that fact. After this, we're visiting with the owner of a company called Boss Vapes. It's a store in the far western suburbs. Jamie Habener's Boss Vapes sells vapes out there. Every time we see new wrinkles in the legislation about it, we think about her, and she's always been a good spokesperson for her shop, her industry, and her angle on things. Speaking of industry, I see that the Dow is trading up. It's been up over 100 and then some all day long. And I think, Producer Elif, where's the Dow right now, please?
The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 165 points at 29,104, John.
Wow, 29,104. 29's been kind of a magic number for a while. Look at that. More on the business side after the news, and that's 11 minutes away. Jamie, let's just finish our conversation then. So while you were talking about how this one guy who smoked for years no longer smokes thanks to the products you guys sell, I just see a whole new generation of people learning to smoke because they do vape.
Okay, and here's where I was going. Right now, no child should use any tobacco product, vape product. Like, it just shouldn't happen, but here's statistics. It does. No child should use alcohol either, but they do. 20 years ago, you had 30% of children using tobacco products. And right now, tobacco, yes, people are using vapes, but tobacco use is at an all-time low.
Yeah.
The same amount of kids are using that used 15, 20 years ago, actually less. You're at 28. It was at 30% 15 years ago. You're just they're replacing it with one thing with another. You know what I'm saying?
Sure, like, I do. But I mean, and go ahead.
And like I said, I in no way, shape, or form condone children using, you know what I'm saying, high school students. It is meant as a smoking cessation device. It is not meant for something to pick up. But you got to look at alcohol. And I just want to throw this out there. If you're going into schools, there is 21 and over alcohol is, right?
Sure.
Yeah. And if you go in, you've asked somebody how many people have tried a vape. So if they've taken one hit off a vape, they're classifying them as a user in the past 30 days.
That's right.
If you were to go into a school, the same high schools, and ask them how many of them have used alcohol in the last 30 days, we're not banning that. You know what I'm saying? Like, they have to find a way to get it to work without banning. Banning doesn't work. Prohibition doesn't work. They've learned that through alcohol. They've learned it through several different, you know what I'm saying? Prohibition doesn't work. Banning stuff is not going to work.
I think that argument almost works. I think I'm a bit of an outlier here in the public health space or in the talk show space, but it would seem to me like if I had my druthers between kids smoking tobacco or vaping, I would choose that they vape licensed, regulated products, the likes of which you sell. I would prefer they use neither. But this crisis of more kids vaping, if it comes at the expense of fewer kids using cigarettes, I think I would make that deal. Now, I don't know what drives your business, what the motivation is for people that are in it. Maybe it's just money. Maybe you're trying to help people quit smoking. But the reality is more kids are vaping, fewer kids are using tobacco. I think that's a fair trade. One last text message from one of our listeners, 630. John, nobody I know who vapes uses menthol or tobacco flavors. All of us use fruity or savory flavors. It is very common. I'm in my early 30s, and so is my entire circle. This is 30-year-olds telling me they ain't teenagers. They want the fruity or the savory vapes. And that's exactly what the administration has made illegal. And what you can still get, though, if you're not buying the prepackaged, the containers, the pods.
Prefilled pods.
Yeah. All right, Jamie, it's nice to hear your voice. Good luck to you out there. I appreciate your time and your thoughts and your expertise on this subject. Join us again, okay?
All right, thank you. Have a good day.
Yeah, you have a good day. That's just a weird one, isn't it? I mean, plenty of you are texting in and also saying, well, wait a minute, we're going to ban vapes, but we're not going to ban cigarettes. That just doesn't make any sense to some of you. The one thing that didn't make any sense to a lot of you today was our conversation with Ray Kaplan. We were going over Elizabeth Warren's plan. If she becomes president day one, she has the authority, she says. It's debatable, but she would cancel all student loans. We are over $1 trillion owed to the federal government, not private banks, she said. That's money federally banked, federal loans. $1.2 trillion would instantly go away if Elizabeth Warren had her way, were she to become president. She's thinking that you think that's swell. A lot of you think that is not. Someday, some of us are going to start to talk more seriously about the debt that this country has. How does that not keep them awake at night? Ji Suki's down the hall, getting ready for the business lunch. By the way, Ji, I just wanted to mention this. Earlier, we asked you to text in TV shows that you can watch. Like, if you just put it on, it's just a great little escape. Cagney and Lacey, All in the Family. John the Munsters. I haven't watched an episode of that in a long time.
I am a huge fan of Law and Order. If it's on, then I can just watch it. And also The Office.
Yeah, I said that. I think I would allow The Office, but Friends doesn't count. That's like cheating. Buffy and X-Files, Fawlty Towers, Mission Impossible. Magnum P.I. is a fun one to go back.
I used to watch Magnum P.I. with my father and fantasize. I thought Tom Selleck was so handsome, and there was the helicopter, and it was set in Hawaii. It seemed very exotic and
exciting. Did your dad know that you were fantasizing while you were sitting there next to him watching
well,
the show?
No. I mean, I think I just looked up to him. I just thought he was so, I thought he was very handsome and tall, and he had the moustache.
What are you doing on your show today?
We are doing a lot today. Of course, we have Terry Savage, a favorite of Wintrust Business Lunch. She's going to be taking calls and text messages and hopefully solving folks' financial issues.
Call or text now. Yeah, she's good.
Oh, she's so good. And then we're also going to be talking with a reporter from the Indy Star about sports betting. Are you a sports bettor?
I am not, but it is a coming, isn't it?
It sure is. So it's doing very well there. So we're going to talk about maybe what we have to look forward to here in Illinois.